To order.
Where were the intro remarks again?
Do you have the remarks from Carrie, the welcome to our virtual meeting?
Yeah, let me take a look here.
We'll pull those up.
Apologies. I apologize. I am not seeing them. Just give me a moment here.
We'll have Carrie get those to you real quickly here. Sorry about that. Tell you what, we'll roll like this. All right, everybody, welcome to the virtual meeting here. During the virtual meeting, registered individuals, please keep your cameras off and remain on mute until called upon. Individuals, members of the board, please keep your cameras on. Board will recognize individuals in the order of which they raise their hands and appear. Staff will answer questions as necessary. I think we have everything we need. Jim, you've called the meeting to order here. I think we can begin.
Okay, well, first item will be approval of the minutes of the March 18th, 2025 meeting. Are there any comments? A motion to approve? George? We need to unmute you.
I move approval of the minutes.
Okay, it's moved. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor? Do not raise your hands now. All opposed? Raise your hands now. Seeing none, the minutes are approved and we'll move on to public comment. Anything today?
All right, we have no individuals registered for public comment. We do have two individuals who are registered for item number two.
Okay, so let's move to disclosures and recusals. Anybody need to do anything on that today? Lou?
Yeah, I'm going to recuse myself on, it looks like agenda item number two, the 3322 Agriculture Drive.
Okay, so noted. So we will move on to that item. Item two,
All right.
3322 Agriculture Drive.
All right. Item number two for consideration is in regards to property located at 3322 Agriculture Drive. The property owner is seeking a variance from the 2015 IBC section 2603.4.13, which is a requirement for the maximum size of walk-in coolers or freezers that are unsprinkled to be 400 square feet or less. In this situation, the applicant is seeking a variance from this section, and they are seeking for approval of a 4,996 square foot addition to a ultra cold freezer, minus 76 degrees Fahrenheit, to be unsprinkled. There are two previous variances that have been approved in the past for this. We do have two individuals who are registered to speak, Brad Hughes in support, and Margot Anderson in support, available to answer questions. So, Brad, we're going to go ahead and turn your video off here just as a member of the public. Brad is registered in support to speak. So, Brad, you have 3 minutes. The floor is yours.
Kind of a little different.
Thank you. Good afternoon. We're here as the, excuse me, the architect and engineer for the project with Shive Hattery.
Anyway,
working for Nisco.
Excuse me. Excuse me. There's two voices going on here.
So
what's the other voice?
From our honeymoon.
I'm not sure. Is there
somebody in your back room talking about their honeymoon?
The honeymoon's over.
Background noise. Hold on, just one moment.
Yeah, he posts. He loves to chew on his ball and grab it and run around. And wants us to...
Can you stop recording for a few minutes here?
Unfortunately, I can't stop recording, but we will have Brad here on mute here. Well, let's get him.
The only person who's not muted is Margot. So I'm wondering if it's her.
I'm fairly certain it's coming from Brad. You'll see that when a person is speaking and noise is coming from their speaker, you get the green box around that individual. So now if somebody else says something and it's noise coming from that individual, the green box will indicate that that's who's speaking.
Sorry, apologies for that. Brad Hughes with Shive Hattery here. We're the architect and engineer for this project with Danisco. So I think as Kyle described there, the freezer building addition with the freezer and the request to, like the previous projects, were done with a variance in 2007 and 2009. Request is to not have the fire protection system.
Excuse me, but we're still hearing something in the background. Got to get rid of that.
Is there?
Yeah. So that one about me.
Okay, sorry.
You guys want to cover it? Sorry.
Any better now?
Really good.
No.
Is there a way that you could potentially move to a different location and or ask the individuals to continue their personal conversation, maybe in an alternate location?
Yeah, I'll do that. Hold on a moment.
Thank you.
Well, this is a first. I've been on this board off and on for a long time and never got this one.
The honeymoon's over.
Yeah.
That must be a real sensitive mic, though, or some more sort of wavelength or frequency it's set at.
Yeah, it's almost like somebody else's conversation is being picked up by the wireless connection or something.
Okay. Better now, I'm hoping. Sorry about that again.
Okay, let's give it a try.
So, again, Brad Hughes with Shive Hattery, we're the architect and engineer for this project with Danisco. And similar to the previous variance request that Kyle mentioned in 2007 and 2009, the request is to not wet sprinkler inside the freezer enclosure for the ultra cold storage, which is at minus 76. So we included the background information that was reviewed by Matt Hamilton at the fire department, and providing a bunch long list, I guess, of ways to accommodate and address the situation, and similar approach taken to the previous projects and with the variances from 2007, 2009. Where there was sprinkler outside the freezer and other accommodations for smoke detection and oxygen sensors and what's called lone worker sensors within the enclosure to make sure that individuals are monitored when they're inside the enclosure. I think that's the summary. If feel free to, if there are questions related to that, we can. Margo is with Sunisco is also on the meeting.
Okay, Margo, would you like to add anything before we start talking about it as a board?
I guess the only thing I'd add to what Brad commented on is that you would think technology, since the last time we needed a variance for this, would have gotten us to the point where maybe there would be some fire protection equipment out there that would be appropriate for that cold space, but there just is not. We did do, or, you know, one of the Shive engineers on our behalf did do a technology search, and there is still nothing out there that would be rated for this cold of a temperature.
Okay, thank you. So, Bill, I have an opening question for you.
Yeah.
Is it possible that a fire could break out in a 76 below freezer?
Yes, it is possible. Likelihood diminishes significantly, right? We have thermal, exothermic reactions all the time. You know, they could get started and go. But again, the likelihood of it happening is significantly diminished, right? Because it's going to remove most of the heat. But the other problem we've run into, and I think when this originally came up, was, you know, potentially at times that the system is offline for maintenance and all those other things. And so that's why we supported in the past. You'll have to ask Matt in detail on this specific one if there's anything's really changed. But yeah. I wouldn't say the answer is it could never happen.
Yeah, I mean, for the layperson's thinking, that's way, way, way too cold. How could there ever be a fire? But as you say, it wouldn't be a thermal fire, so to speak. I mean, it wouldn't be like paper burning. It would be chemical type fires, right?
Correct. We could. Okay. There are some scenarios where that is plausible.
Okay. So, does anybody have any questions for the applicant? It's, I guess, maybe the first thing is to try to understand exactly what the what's being done, going through what's being done. So, I'm just reading through this, but I assume, I mean, not being an expert, it's, you know, obviously meaning fire department, is comfortable with it as presented, but maybe some of the board members want to understand better what the alternatives are. I'm kind of curious as to, you know, how it all fits together. George?
Well, I'll ask a question. Is there much of a load inside the freezer, fire load in the freezer? Like, what's in there that can burn other than, like, maybe the walls? Is the items that are being chilled, I think, and it was to make them inert, is there much of a fire load there?
So I can answer that. And the product that's being stored there would be liquid at ambient temperatures. And yes, it is being stored there. You're exactly correct. It is being stored at that temperature to deactivate it or essentially put it in stasis. So I would not consider that the product is a fire load, but the materials that we have the ingredients in. So they're in either plastic 1 kilo bags or they're in cardboard, not quite as large as a pallet size, but a large size cardboard box. So one or the other is what the product is being stored in. So that is, obviously is combustible, but I would say it's only there to contain the product. It's not there for its own purpose, but yes, would be combustible.
But the surrounding building is constructed of non-combustible materials, it says. But what about the enclosure of the freezer? Is that combustible?
The freezer is constructed of insulated metal panels. So there is an insulation in between two layers of metal. So the interior of the freezer, you see an interior metal panel. And we did send the specs to Matt Hamilton on those panels. I don't know what classification he would put them in. I don't. Yeah, I'm not sure what terminology to use about insulation specs.
Okay, Richard, you're muted.
In that liquid product, is there anything flammable in there that keeps that product that you're storing in there in a liquid form? Alcohol or formaldehyde, anything like that?
No, it is not.
And
No.
then you're going to protect it with heat sensors, is what you're planning on putting in the freezer?
Right. We have heat sensors that have a dual function. First of all, we want to keep the product in stasis. So we want to keep it very cold, and we have temperature sensors for that purpose. But the temperature sensors would also function to alert us if there was a temperature increase. That would indicate there's an issue. Either the refrigeration equipment isn't working well, or we've got a heat load in the freezer, and we would certainly investigate that quickly.
What are you using to chill the freezer, to freeze it? Is it ammonia?
We do not use ammonia. The two existing freezers we have are a Freon-based refrigeration, so a more environmentally friendly, obviously, but still a Freon-based. This new freezer will actually use air as a refrigerant. So it is a newer technology, something that we are learning about as we go forward.
And how big is it? It's nothing that you would have to use a forklift or a lift to get your product in it into that freezer.
Oh, it is a 5,000 square foot freezer. So
Okay.
it is definitely sizable. And yes, they use a pallet jack, so a motorized pallet jack to move the product in and out.
Are they battery operated?
They are, and the batteries are not very happy at those cold temperatures. But yeah, it's a heavy load for people to pull manually. So we do try to use the powered fork jacks.
And do you have a central area to charge these units? You know, to recharge the carts?
Yeah, absolutely. They do have a charging station. Yeah, generally we make it in and out, but the batteries overall, they don't last as long as typical. But yeah.
Okay, that's all I have right now.
Sounds much better than a gasoline. Yeah, you certainly don't want that in that room, I guess. But anyway, Daryl?
Yeah, I don't know who this question might be addressed to, and it's probably more of a curiosity question. If instead of water, I was just wondering why it wouldn't be designed to use a chemical agent or an oxygen depleter for a fire suppression system of some kind, like FM200 or something like that, if water is such an issue. It's probably more of a curiosity question than anything, and I'm not exactly sure who might be able to answer that.
This is Brad. There's some discussion in our document or backup about the dry system and the recommended temperatures and operation for a dry system. And it's very difficult to get the system to operate reliably at those temperatures, based on the humidity and such.
That's understandable.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Matt?
I can add a little bit more to that. The clean agent systems, not the, a dry system is still a water-based fire suppression system. Clean agent is typically not down to those temperatures because it's a gas. It's actually a gas that discharges it. It's a liquid that discharges as a gas. So they're usually down to minus 30, minus 40. So that when you get down to that minus 76, they are the same in that regard. So kind of the same listing issue.
Yeah, so it's pretty clear that this system doesn't exist that's going to work at this temperature. And I think that's likely what the other ones were all about. I can't remember. I'm sure I was there for the ones back way back when, but I'm going to guess that was the big issue. So, any other questions? Richard, you're muted.
The heat sensors that they have in there, are they listed to work on that cold of a temperature?
Brad, can you take that one?
Yeah, there was actually a question that I asked about that in terms of the heat trace that's required to keep some of the safety systems operating at approved temperatures for their systems. And I don't recall specifically on that item.
Yeah, so they're specifically asking about the temperature sensors, and I'm assuming yes, because they do control the refrigeration system, but I can't say that I've looked at the spec for that unit myself.
Matt, maybe you have an answer.
So to clarify a little bit, the alarming system is actually an air sampling VESDA system that they're proposing. So what they're doing with that is not necessarily a heat detector. It's an air sampling system. They have to have a certain amount of heat tracing as that cold piping comes out of the freezer prior to it going into the sampling. I'm going to call it the computer, the box, whatever you want, the control panel. So they have to heat that air up prior to it going into the control panel, and they have addressed that. That was a question that I did ask Rich.
Okay. And yeah, that's all I have right now.
Okay, Sean.
It sounds like this is inside of a cylinder that will be protected above with sprinklers. So let's say this unit caught on fire. We're not concerned about it catching the rest of the building on fire because at that point it'd be outside the freezer. Fire suppression would cover it, right? I guess my question is if there was an individual inside this space and somehow, either when it was being decommissioned to work on or while it was being actively used, and there was a fire to start. Is there any manual fire extinguishers or what's the life safety protocol on something like this? I mean, I was just thinking about if 5,000 square foot room, somebody's in the back of this room, they're trying to get to the exit. How do they safely get out of this space if there was an extreme event? I.e., is there a fire extinguisher within this room that's accessible to a human being? Because again, I think we're probably, my assumption is the building itself is okay outside this.
Right, there wouldn't be, and Margo, you maybe have some familiar with your other freezers, but there wouldn't be within the space, the freezer space, that manual fire protection. It would be relying on the exterior of the freezer system or freezer enclosure.
Yeah, I wonder, is there a fire extinguisher that would operate at that temperature? Can
Sorry,
anybody
just
speak to that?
Matt, would you know? Or Bill?
Most of them are minus 40 degrees. That minus 40 is kind of the magic number in our world. That's what a lot of the testing has been done to for their listing. I mean, I don't think we really want people trying to fight a fire in there. We want them to get out. And if you guys lose your freezer, that's on you guys. I hate to say it that way, but.
No, I'm just again, I think the freezer could be will probably be protected. The building outside the freezer would be protected. I'm just curious if there's anything, I mean, fire blanket. I mean, is there anything, any kind of safety things? I mean, it just seems a little strange to have a place where people are going to be working that's unprotected.
Well, that goes back to my original thought on this is that what's the likelihood of a fire? And Bill, you said probably pretty darn low, but I'm wondering if there's anybody has studied this for, these ultra low temperatures. There's ever been a fire in a minus 76 degree space, because that certainly would inform us. If there's never been one, and it's a scientist says it's impossible or near impossible, I think I would sleep pretty well at night. But I haven't heard that yet. Rich, I think you were ahead of Bill, but Bill, maybe you're addressing what I'm just talking about.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things on this. One, our preference is for people to get out. We don't we're not big advocates of people fighting fires. Yeah, if it's a small little 1x1 fire extinguisher works, but if it gets bigger than that, people tend to delay. We delay notifying 911. We get people get a puff of bad air or even the chemicals from the fire extinguisher, and it's probably just as hazardous. So we'd rather people to get out. There's not a lot of these freezers, right? So there's not a lot of data on this. Doesn't so that's why we're not, it's in this land where the code isn't going to address it, because it's not prevalent out there, right? We do have a concern with the manual jacks, because eventually, sometime, the technology is going to go lithium ion batteries. We know that lithium ion batteries have the capability of burning. I don't know if everybody's seen it, but we've seen a Tesla in the bottom of the lake still burning. In the middle, so those things are real, but they are the likelihood is very low, right? I think we've acknowledged that. We have the detection system, which is the VESDA system. Matt explained, is really a smoke detector where we're pulling air out of the freezer. They got to heat the air up a little bit so we don't freeze up the sensor, but it's pulling smoke out. So we have some detection, get the fire department there right away. We have a fire inside this freezer. Most of that product is going to be destroyed, probably for other health reasons. It's probably going to be all tossed from a liability standpoint, but we're still going to protect the building by having the sprinkler system on the outside. The coolers are, metal frame, so I should say metal frame, but metal panels, insulated panels, so the insulation's not exposed in there. So unless we get something really, really, really hot in there, we don't typically see a failure of the freezers. And they have to obviously meet a standard in the IBC that talks about how they have to be constructed. So from that perspective, with the having the safeguards of the VESDA detection system, the cold temperatures, and this is a facility with a low occupant load, and the employees are familiar with all the operations, right? They're gonna have to go through annual testing as part of their safety protocols from other regulators. So we feel pretty confident that if something were to happen, one, the likelihood is so low, but if it were to happen, we would get early enough detection and would not be a catastrophic loss.
Yeah, I on that, I'm just gonna say, I don't know if people agree with this. I'm going to throw this out there, is that any code, trying to meet the code, does meeting the code mean you're 100% safe? I would say no, you're never 100% safe. You can put handrails all over the place on a stairway, but somebody could still fall down and kill themselves falling down the stairs. So should we not allow stairs? I mean, I think we're kind of beating the horse pretty hard here, but Rich?
Yeah, the only thing that I would like to is that lithium, checking the batteries. We did. I know most of you probably don't remember in '93, Central Storage was a $100 million fire at Madison, and that was a refrigeration building. It wasn't a freezer at the type of temperatures we have here, but it was the source was the forklift when the batteries caught on fire and exploded. They consider that a source. So I mean, I would want them to just to look in to make sure that those battery operated carts are listed to operate in that temperature, because what we're finding out with lithium fires, a lot of times it's been where people have the wrong type chargers on them and stuff that will cause that lithium fire, or they say charging something when it's very, very cold. I know even my power tools, I don't leave the lithium ones in the charger anymore. When they're charged up, I take them off. So that'd be my only concern, is that they would make sure that they have the proper listing on the devices they're using inside that cold unit, that if you had a fire, a lithium fire, I think it could be an ignition source. So that's the only thing that I'm thinking that I would follow up on. I know there's probably not a system out there that's going to work properly with those temperatures when you get that cold. But I would want something in it that said also that whatever's used in there, as far as forklifts, anything with batteries, are listed to be used at that temperature, and that they use, you know, some safety in charging those, and you know, not leaving them in there overnight or whatever. Make sure they pull them out of there. But that's all I have.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know if a lithium ion battery in a 76 below situation could, I assume from what you said earlier, Bill, it is theoretically possible that would be a problem in there. That's a good point. And another question is, are there any forklifts made that would use a different type of battery that's not subject to this problem? I have no idea. Matt?
A lot of the forklifts are still currently lead acid batteries. So like a standard lead acid car battery. I'm not sure, maybe, I don't know if you can ask the applicant what they are using, but that is currently what a lot of the forklifts are still, from what I've seen.
Okay, so Brad or Margo, do you want to comment on this?
I can't say with certainty. I'm just not that familiar with, you know, what the visual difference would be between them. But I can certainly follow up on that.
Okay. Well, I'd say for our purposes here, I think you bring up a really good point, Rich, and I think we should. Well, I'm just going to suggest perhaps, when it comes time for a motion, that you would be the best person maybe to frame that as possibly, you know, another condition of approval, like the fire department's letter indicating that everything that's in the application will be met, plus the concern about the batteries. Either you or somebody else has great language for that. Perhaps that's where we're headed. I don't know. Bill? Your hand's up.
Yeah, sorry. I couldn't follow my mute. Sorry, Jim. I think we've kind of factored in the possibility of the lithium ion batteries into our calculus about, you know, the risk. That's why we haven't said no, don't put anything in there. So I think we have incorporated that into our thinking. So I'm less concerned about that as a potential, because we don't want to, it would be tough for us to police that down the road as new technology comes about. We wouldn't want to shoestring the applicant with their operations, because that would just be, it would be a nightmare for us to continue to follow up on, and as their staff changes. Or you can use this in this freezer, but not that freezer or that space. So we would be comfortable with not addressing the battery storage as far as the type, I should say, the charging and all that kind of stuff that Rich alluded to earlier. By all means, they would have to maintain how they charge them and their spaces and the ventilation and the fire rating, and depending on the size, capacity, and whatever that is regulated by the IBC, IFC. So I just want to throw that out there.
Okay, so it's been discussed. Rich, do you want to react to that? or anybody on the board want to react to that, whether we feel we need to add anything more to the fire department's recommendation and the applicant's list of things they're going to do. So you first, Rich, since it's your concern brought up.
Yeah, I think that I can go along with Bill on that, but I think it's something that, you know, that the owner should take, responsibility to look at to make sure they're using the right listed equipment in there. And with the new fires that they're having with these lithium batteries, when they explode, they go out, and then the smaller units, almost like stars in a, when you're shooting up fireworks, then they go out farther, they explode and catch on fire. And, they've happened with bicycles, they've happened with, so that's something I think they should look into. But I would go along with the Madison Fire Department's recommendations on approving it with what they are requiring.
Okay, thank you. So that's good discussion. I think we've dug in pretty deep here. Does anybody have anything else, or is there a motion that somebody wants to make? George?
I move approval of the variance as submitted with the recommendations of the fire department.
Okay, it's moved. Is there a second? Daryl?
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. I think we can just do our usual vote here. All in favor, do not raise your hand now. All opposed, raise your hand now. Okay, motion is passed. Thank you for coming and presenting to us.
All right. Thanks very much. Brad, we'll be in touch. I'll be in touch with you tomorrow just to wrap things up from a paperwork perspective here. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. All right.
So now back to our agenda, which I've now shut down somehow, but I will get back up here. I think it's communications and announcements, but...
Nope, we have one more item for consideration.
That's right.
An item of referral.
Yes, so I need to get back to to Ethan's email to me. Sorry about this. Should be just a second.
I'll tee it off here while you're pulling that up, Jim, here. So okay. Item number three under consideration here is a request of the Madison Fire Department for the repealing and replacement of Section 9.34 of the Madison General Ordinances, which is related to the licensing of private ambulance services. A motion was made by the council to refer to the relevant agencies for input, which is how it ended up in front of the Building Board of Appeals as a licensing agency as well. We have representatives from the city attorney's office as well as the fire department here in order to be able to answer any questions that the board might have in relationship to the language and what is being repealed and the proposal for replacement. The board's responsibilities here would be to recommend to the council any sort of action. As a reminder, the board is not adopting the ordinance. They're simply offering recommendations to the common council, which will ultimately choose to adopt or modify or decline adding this as an ordinance to the city of Madison. Bill, would you like to speak on it?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of quick background. Currently, there's an existing ordinance that is regulating this through the Department of Health. Department of Health is not interested in being a part of that process. So we're moving it over to the City of Madison Fire Department with some modifications. But essentially, what we're looking to do is regulate private ambulance services that might be transporting within the city of Madison to other places. They might be going from nursing homes to the hospitals or from the hospitals back to nursing homes or other facilities. The intent is that we would not be regulating anything from another agency. So ambulances from Sun Prairie, Verona, Middleton, all those are exempt from this, as well as ambulances that might be providing a service to another community, such as you know, Deerfield at one point, Town of Deerfield had their own private ambulance that they were bringing in. If those calls originate from outside the city going into the hospitals, those are also not regulated by this ordinance. And the checks and balances that we're putting in place is we're looking to confirm that they have are maintaining their Wisconsin Department of Health licensure, as well as having their ambulances inspected in accordance with DOT Trans 309 for the rigs that they're using.
Okay. Yeah. Andrew Schauer.
Hello. Nice to meet you all. I'm Andy Schauer. I'm one of the assistant city attorneys. I've been working with the fire department on this ordinance, and the only overlap with your committee here is effectively that the ordinance to be effective needs some committee to be able to hear an appeal of it if there is a determination that the fire department makes that there is disagreement on. We foresee there being less than a handful of companies that are going to apply for and maintain this ordinance, or excuse me, this license. And therefore, we don't foresee there being a ton of appeals, especially since the fire department has told me that, and Bill can correct me if I'm wrong, but basically they're going to enforce this by, you know, providing notices of violation and working with the companies to get into compliance before getting to any point of where there would be necessarily an appeal to some sort of final determination that a license were to be declined for some reason. So the board's ability to hold a hearing to simply determine if X, Y, and Z on a checklist is there is the sum total of the skills that the committee will need to have a hearing on the ordinance if it ever becomes necessary. So I hope that that helps quell any possible concern.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I guess if it's a matter of just seeing if they've checked certain boxes, it probably isn't going to tax us too hard. It sounds simple. It's interesting that it would come to us. I'm not quite sure that this board is, you know, this is one of our typical kind of duties as a board, but I don't know that I object to it either. Lou?
I want to understand our other, even Bill, you kind of gave a little bit of where this is coming from, but do other municipalities have ordinances or codes? Can you create a parallel for me on this?
Sure, Lou. The only one that I'm aware of, and of course, EMS is not my forte with the fire department. I'm dealing with this from a process standpoint and an ordinance process, but I am aware that Oshkosh Fire Department or City Oshkosh has a very similar process where they regulate licenses. A lot of it has to do what our concerns are, awareness that these people are operating in our community, and then two, the ability to understand that they are meeting the minimum thresholds, and if they're presenting themselves as an ambulance service, we want to make sure that our constituents are aware of what they may or may not truly be offering and authorized to offer. That's a big piece of why we feel we need this regulation.
And have there been incidents where somebody is, I'll put it this way bluntly, they're pretending to be an ambulance service?
Not that I'm aware of, but one of the things that has come up, and concerns come up, like, so we do have, you know, a number of facilities that may look to contract for ambulance services, such as special events. And we don't know, you know, a lot of times those groups will look to us to say, hey, yay, nay, what do you think of these folks? And so we would like to be able to say, well, we've licensed them, and we've verified that they have done these five elements that are required by state law, you know, they meet a minimum standard.
Has this been discussed with any of the current providers? I mean, in other words, are we creating something that they think is outlandish, unnecessary, or otherwise resisting in any way, or has it even been?
I can't speak to that personally, Jim, but I do know that right now it is an ordinance, right? It's just a matter of right now, I think we're tweaking it a little bit and moving it from the Department of Health over to us. So I can't speak to how much oversight they've really had. I think the big change for us is taking over with the Alliant Energy Center coming into the city of Madison. There's probably some changes there that may not have impacted providers before, but if they were working any other events, this is not a change to them, if you will.
Okay, yeah.
One other thing I think is important to add here is that the city of Madison isn't, except for the insurance, isn't adding anything. The insurance requirement isn't adding anything other than what the state already requires of these ambulances to provide service. So we're just looking to make sure that they have their state license and that the ambulances that they're going to use comply with state procedures that they already should be complying with. So in that sense, it should not be very burdensome on these individual companies to comply with this. And as far as notice goes, this ordinance was introduced at the March 25th board meeting that was on the agenda for this meeting. And I was actually a little surprised that we didn't have maybe an ambulance company or two have their time to talk to us about it. But as I say, there's no other public comment to this meeting. They'll certainly have that opportunity at the city council meeting where this will hopefully pass on May 6th. So there will be, as I say, plenty of opportunity for the public, including these companies, to weigh in.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so truth is, the way I see it, it's not like some big additional burden on these folks where they're going to scream, you know, what are you doing to us? Because it's similar to what they've got to meet right now. So that allays my personal fears on this. What exactly are we doing? Are we recommending approval to another commission? Is that what goes on here? We're not the ones who will make the final call, right?
I can answer that too. It would be in order for the committee to recommend approval to the city council, or to pass it forward without a recommendation, or to give it a negative recommendation. Those are your options, basically.
Okay, everybody got that? So, Lou?
So, I just want to make it my understanding for our role as the board, you know, the committee here, we would see essentially if there was a licensure disagreement. It's like, hey, you know, I disagree that, you know, I didn't qualify for this. I'm going to take this information from the board. Or the other thing is usually there's an enforcement action, or I want to say it's an enforcement action. That's what I'm going to call it. That we could then get here an appeal that, hey, no, they got this stuff kind of wrong. And we could go. Is that the correct right there?
Yeah. The ordinance provides for, in terms of enforcement, a penalty for forfeiture not less than $10, no more than $1,000 for each and every violation thereof, each day or portion thereof. The violation shall continue to be a separate offense. So generally speaking, it doesn't come to that. The fire department has already told us that they're going to say, hey, you're not in compliance. You need to be in compliance. They'll give them a date by which to be in compliance. And then if they're not, then they can start enforcing this And they would have to do that through a long form written complaint. And that would the order, but the decision, and then that complaint would actually go to municipal court. The decision to find them not in compliance is something that they could appeal to this board, and that appeal would be a licensing appeal, like the other licensing appeals that this board maybe has done in other areas. Would just determine whether or not the violation that the fire department found is sustained or not.
Let me throw something else in there.
Please.
The fire department can take an action of either suspension or revocation of the license if we find that we're not getting somewhere with, hey, you can't do that, do this, and they refuse to comply. Our next step could be to revoke their license or suspend their license. If they don't think that we have done that with due diligence and an applicable process where they feel that they are in compliance with the requirements that are spelled out in this ordinance, then they can ask for a hearing from this board to be able to air out and saying, hey, we provided this, this, and this. Here's what the ordinance says, that all we have to do, this, this, and this. We feel the fire department has been going down, taking the wrong decision. That's when you guys would step in and make that final decision. Yeah, the fire department screwed up and they shouldn't have done that. Or no, we agree with the fire department. They had it. You didn't do this. We stand with the fire department's position to revoke or suspend your license.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like we're going to have an undue burden here. I'm not going to lose any sleep over this one either. Okay. So, anybody else got questions or concerns or want to make a motion? I guess the motion would be, you know, recommending approval of it to the council, as I understand it. And somebody please, yeah, I see a positive head shake. So, George? Let's get you unmuted here.
I move that we recommend the city council approve this.
Okay, it's been moved to recommend that. Is there a second? Richard, we need to unmute you.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor, do not raise your hand now. Richard, I assume you're going to put your hand down.
Yep, I'm lowering my hand.
Okay. Okay, so Lou, are you?
What I want to, can I just
make a comment?
Yeah, I would like to register myself as abstaining from the vote. I don't believe I, you know, it's one way or the other.
Okay. Yeah, you recused yourself from item two, but not item three.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to do with this, but you can certainly not vote if you don't want to. If I'm thinking right, there's no requirement for you to vote.
That's correct. You can choose favor, against, or you can abstain, which does not count towards the total. It's different from recusal, where a person who recuses cannot participate in the discussion.
Right. So based on that, I'm going to go back and say we're in the middle of all in favors. And if everybody in favor cannot raise their hand now. Okay, everybody opposed, please raise your hand now. Everybody abstaining, please raise your hand now. Okay, so the vote is there. I think we've got it. I think we're good. So thank you for presenting this. And we'll just put it on our sizable list of things we must do in the future.
Thank you, gentlemen, in advance, for your time and your efforts in this. I know that this is a little bit outside of the norm, but we do appreciate your willingness to take this on.
Thank you. Right. So, yeah, I think now is communications and announcements. I have one to put me on the list. Anybody else?
Just one communication on my end here. There was a request 2 meetings ago to get all of the future agenda, building board meetings out. Ethan has been sent those here today. So you should keep an eye in your email for upcoming Outlook calendar invitations that will take us through the end of the year. So that way they will be on your calendar. If you know you're not going to be able to make one, please do, of course, send a reply. And of course, as schedules change, if something comes up, you're not able to make a meeting as well, please also let us know. But this is meant to act as a placeholder for individuals that you'll be able to have a reference point in the future. We'll still check quorum in advance of meetings, but this is just meant to try and give you as much advance insight as possible.
Great, thanks. Okay, so mine is just a question, and I may have missed this, but on the agenda, it says petition for variance, area exceptions, or appeals. It's either a mistake, and that's area exception left over from the old zoning board, or there's an area exception thing that I don't know about that we now would be looking at. Anybody know?
So I am not aware of that header, although I would be lying if I told you I remember what that header previously said. So I will have to go back and look at that.
Yeah, let's just say let us know if we're starting to do something that we haven't done before.
There are no changes relative to the responsibilities of this board.
Okay, so that's probably a typo, but okay. Yeah, I'm going to stop worrying.
Sure. I can say, looking back at these, it looks like that has been on many of the previous agendas, and I believe it's something that just gets auto-filled for the agendas.
Okay. So maybe we should get that struck off there just to avoid confusion.
But I'll look to see what we can do. Maybe just return it to just petitions for variance.
It's obviously causing a lot of distress out here, so we'd appreciate any efforts you can make on that. Okay, thank you. Any other communications? Seeing none.
Oops. Any luck with new members?
Yes.
Ah.
I don't have a name to announce, but we have an applicant at the mayor's office, which I think will be a good fit. So I hope to have an announcement at the next meeting. But I do have a new applicant, so that's one, which is better than zero, but not as good as two.
That's progress, though. That's progress. Okay. Anything else? And if not, motion to adjourn. George.
I move adjournment.
Okay, it's moved. Is there a second? Lou?
I'll second.
Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor, do not raise your hand now. All opposed, raise your hand now. Lou, put your hand down. You didn't want your hand opposed, right, Lou?
I was moving it around. I got lost moving it around.
Okay. We are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Excellent, all. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
You too.